Next matter is Jose Lanista Nunez versus Attorney General. Give Ms. Wells like a second to get situated.
Oh, yes, sure thing. May it please the court, John Leschak, Leschak and Associates, on behalf of the petitioner, Jose Landestoy Nunez, also known as Jose Nunez.
I'm sorry, I got the name wrong. I was looking at the next case. Ms. McKinney. Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, on behalf of Jose Landestoy Nunez, a.k.a. Jose Nunez, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honor, in this case, the Board of Immigration Appeals has committed numerous legal errors. The government claims that petitioner is trying to dress up an abuse of discretion claim as a question of law. Quite to the contrary. Here, the board is trying to dress up their legal errors as a question of discretionary decision making. The regulations...
Yes, why isn't this case more like Palmer than Fortenot? If you can get it into our Fortenot decision, it seems to be advance your argument. Why isn't this more like Palmer?
So Palmer is distinguishable because in Palmer, the IJ, the immigration judge, actually did not find that the respondent was rehabilitated. In fact, when the BIA was talking about how the IJ, rather than making a finding of rehabilitation, he said, your conduct justifies denial of your application for cancellation of removal, and the only reason I'm granting you cancellation is because of the extreme equities involved with your young children. That's why they granted the cancellation application, not on the basis of a finding of rehabilitation.
Where's the finding here? You can clearly infer a finding from everything the IJ said about the sincerity. The IJ was optimistic about the chances of Mr. Nunez proceeding and basically in a very productive way in society. The IJ thought that Mr. Nunez was credible, took full responsibility. But is there a factual finding, again, without the inference from everything that the IJ said? Because the BIA credited all that, the BIA noted all that, but they disagreed with what inferences to be drawn from those very positive factors.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, the IJ did not use the particular word rehabilitated, but it is very clear from everything that was stated in the oral decision that he did, in fact, find the respondent, now the petitioner, to be rehabilitated, especially when he credited, he said he was a completely credible witness, and he believed his testimony, and he testified that he had changed himself through his religious dedication to, he was an evangelical Christian, and through his faith in God, that he had changed himself. And the judge credited that testimony, and that was why in the final, in the closing...
That was the IJ's opinion, that all of that leads to a conclusion that there's very little likelihood of this person reoffending.
Exactly.
The BIA looked at all that and said, yeah, we get all those things. We're not so sure that that leads to the conclusion that, you know, they're going to say, well, judge, just the conclusion, that's a finding. And I don't mean it in that sense. The BIA looked at all that and said that we don't think that necessarily means that the person has changed his life to the point that we're comfortable with in allowing cancellation of removal. Why isn't that opinion, i.e. discretion?
So the BIA claimed that they were engaged in a discretionary reweighing of the positive and negative equities in the case. But that's exactly what the BIA claimed the same thing in the Guzman versus Holder case from the Second Circuit, which we cited. That was the sodomy case where the immigrant had been charged with sodomy but had not been convicted. And in trial before the IJ, they claimed they were innocent. The IJ made no factual finding that the immigrant had committed the sodomy offense. But then on appeal, he was granted cancellation in Guzman. And then the DHS appealed to the BIA, arguing that the IJ abused his discretion by granting cancellation. BIA says, yes, you know, this sodomy offense was very serious, and we also don't think he's shown sufficient rehabilitation to merit this as an exercise of discretion. It goes before the Second Circuit. Second Circuit says, BIA, you claim that this was just this decision, this reversal of the IJ, was just a result of your discretionary reweighing of the positive and negative equities. But in fact, you engaged in appellate fact-finding by determining that, essentially, you determined that this immigrant committed the sodomy offense, even though he had never been convicted, never admitted that, and the IJ made no factual finding as to that. There's a reason the regulations prohibit the board from engaging in appellate fact-finding. And, Your Honors, there's a reason for that. It's because nothing can take the place of actually seeing the alien and witnesses up close and observing them in person, their facial expressions, the nuances of what they are communicating. And after all, Your Honors, isn't that also what underlies the whole idea of having oral argument? So that the panel...
I thought this one, as long as we're talking about Second Circuit cases, is actually closer to Noble, where the IJ made a finding that I think was clearer than the one here. The IJ in that case said, in light of the foregoing analysis, the court concludes that Noble has finally demonstrated good efforts at rehabilitation. Nevertheless, the Second Circuit said, yeah, but the BIA was just rebalancing the equities. They weren't, you know, overturning that factual finding. Can you talk about Noble for a little bit?
Absolutely. I think our argument is that Noble is also distinguishable because in Noble, the BIA did what it was supposed to do, which was that it looked at rehabilitation, it accepted the factual finding of rehabilitation, and then weighed that against the other negative factors in the case. That's what the board should have done in this case. That's what the board claimed it did in this case, but it's not what the board actually did. And the truth is shown by the language that the board used. It's very particular. I draw the court's attention to the very particular language the board said. In this case, they said, we are not persuaded
right.
by this.
And in Noble, they said, we doubt the authenticity of the petitioner's rehabilitation. How's it really different?
Well, looking at the Second Circuit decision, Your Honor, they did say that they did consider rehabilitation. They were doubting the authenticity of the rehabilitation evidence. Also, if you look at the particular facts of the Noble case, the respondent, the alien, had continued to commit offenses even up until shortly before the date of trial. I think also Noble could be limited to the very particular set of facts of an alien who had just the recidivism. It just keeps going out and committing these same offenses even after he's been put into removal proceedings. And
I actually agree with you that the language from in our case, the BIA's decision that you were about to quote, or started quoting, is the most troublesome part that makes this a close case. But when I look at, back to where Judge McKee started, when I look at the immigration judge's opinion, the structure of the opinion begins with findings of fact, and there's like three and a half pages of findings of fact, and nowhere in there does he say, I find rehabilitation. And then he switches from those factual findings to what he calls his discretionary analysis. This is beginning at the bottom of page 5 and over onto pages 6 and 7. And that's where, in the discretionary analysis, there's all this good language suggesting the possibility of rehabilitation. So I guess I'm back to where Judge McKee started. Where do we find the actual finding of rehabilitation, a factual finding of rehabilitation?
So, again, may it please the court, the IJ never used the particular word rehabilitated.
Yeah.
However, I think that you could reasonably infer that he found the petitioner to have been rehabilitated, especially at the very end where he said the court is optimistic and believes that Mr. Landestoy is going to make positive contributions to society, and therefore we grant him cancellation.
Isn't that, and it's clearly the IJ's opinion. I've been wrestling because I think this is a really close and difficult case. I think you'd agree that two or more people can look at the exact same set of circumstances, even facts, and draw a different conclusion from those facts. Is the conclusion that is drawn one, is it a factual conclusion, or is it a belief? How you weigh those various things, whether you look at one picture and say, I deduce the following from a picture, someone else looks at the picture and says, no, that person's wrong, I deduce something else. It just seems to shade the difference between a factual distinction and a discretionary distinction, and I'm not sure, and maybe it's almost metaphysics we're getting into, I'm not sure that that is fact. I'm also not sure that it's discretion. I just don't know, but it's difficult. And I'll ask your colleague about something that the BIA said in its opinion that troubles me, because it seems that they imposed an impossible burden on Mr. Nunez. They asked him to demonstrate something that no one could demonstrate. But I'm not sure if that's enough for us to do anything under the law.
So it's very interesting the court brings up the question of metaphysics. It reminds me of the painting by the French surrealist artist René Magritte with the pipe, the smoking pipe, and it says, is this a pipe? That's the name of the painting. Is this a pipe? And the answer is no, it is not a pipe. It is a painting of a pipe. So he's bringing up that there can be a distinction between the actual thing and its objective reality and the representation or the understanding of the thing. Is metaphysics. So, but
I just looked at the painting, by the way.
But when it comes, there are certain things where there's an overlap between those two things. For example, rehabilitation. Rehabilitation kind of melds into belief. And I don't think it's, certain things cannot be separated from the beliefs themselves. Especially with rehabilitation, with dealing with things such as, for example, drug addiction or other types of addiction. When is a person rehabilitated? You know, for a person who deals with addiction, they have to struggle with that every single day. And it's a mental state. And it also requires a certain level of belief and a belief in that person. So I think that when it comes to
fact, that's what I'm saying. Is that a fact? Because two different counselors involved with that person could know everything there is to know about the person and conclude differently. One person would say this person is, quote, rehabilitated, very low likelihood of reoffending. Another counselor could look at the person and say, this person's likelihood of reoffending is 50-50. And there's no hard and fast way of determining who's right, who's wrong, even if what they're expressing is a factual conclusion, as opposed to an opinion, which in this context seems to shade into discretion in terms of whether or not you're going to trust the person. Maybe that's what it boils down to. How much do you trust this person after that day? The IJ trusted the person not to be offended. The BIA didn't. They weren't convinced. But again, and I'll ask your colleague about this, as I said, I think they put an impossible burden on them. I'm not sure what that leaves us under the law. I'm just not so sure that this is a fact versus discretion. Frankly, I just don't know the difference anymore after thinking about this an awful lot.
I'm not sure if my time's up, so I'm not sure if the court wants me to respond or anything.
Well, I'm just sharing my thoughts with you. You've got some time on rebuttal. Maybe you can help me rest.
Okay, yes, I'll raise that on rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is Catherine McKinney and I represent the United States Attorney General in this matter. This court should dismiss the petition for review for lack of jurisdiction. It's uncontested that petitioner is removable due to a controlled substance offense, so the criminal alien review bar applies. Additionally, the agency denied relief as a matter of discretion, so the discretionary determination review bar applies.
Yes, you're on discretion. I'm not sure this goes to the discretionary question, but it's what I suggested to your friend of the Mr. Leshak was troubled by. The BIA said in overruling the IJ's findings slash ruling, whatever it was, The BIA took into account all the very positive things that the IJ had found about him. They were very positive things. And it said that, then said that the adverse factors of his serious and extensive criminal history, given them, it is our judgment that discretion cannot be exercised in his favor absent powerful evidence that he has no propensity to reoffend. This record does not contain such evidence. How could one come up with that? I mean, given what he put in the record, the BIA said, well, that's not powerful evidence that he has no propensity to reoffend. What troubles me is no propensity to reoffend. There's, and I'm not sure you're not familiar with it, there's a study by Professor Carnegie Mellon called Redemption, where he looked at, and he looked at people convicted of very serious felonies who had been released, and he tried to find out whether or not persons who have a criminal history are ever safe enough risk for hiring. This came out of an employment discrimination case. He concluded that there comes a point in time, in the average, at which a person is no more statistically likely to reoffend than someone with no criminal record. And the person at issue there was somebody convicted of manslaughter. And he drew that line at 10 years. And he said there's no statistical difference. But he also said that in any individual case, the likelihood of the person reoffending would never be the same as someone who has never been in the criminal justice system, although statistically, there's no distinction. If given that research, and it's the only study out there I know of its kind, when for the BIA to say that he has not suggested, he has not come forward with powerful evidence that he has no propensity to reoffend, how could he have proven that? How could he have proven negative? How can he show? A priest, and we all know this from the Attorney General's report, you could get somebody who comes in here as a cardinal. That person couldn't show they have no propensity to offend.
Well, my response to that is twofold. With respect to the evidence of the study that Your Honor was citing.
I just didn't know if you, I want to hear your answer. But it may well be that what I'm getting at is still discretion. I don't know. Well, but that's what troubles me.
And that's, listening to what Your Honor had to say about the study and evidence of rehabilitation, I think that would lend itself even more towards the argument that this is evidence going towards rehabilitation that's evaluated as a matter of discretion and not a bar or a tick in a box that you meet that then, boom, you've established rehabilitation. But it's evidence going towards rehabilitation that the agency is considering when they are conducting their discretionary analysis.
But don't they have to give him a fair opportunity to make that showing?
And here I think what they were saying was, as we're weighing the positive and negative factors, and if we look at the context in which this arises, the agency has to weigh the positive and negative factors in determining whether or not to exercise discretion. And in their published decisions in the matter of Marin, which is a 212C case, there it was listed out the factors that have been deemed relevant to those considerations. And then in the subsequent published decision of CBT, the board has said those factors are also relevant to our discretionary analysis in the cancellation context. But it's clear in both of those published cases when they talk about if in a particular case a criminal record is present, normally evidence of genuine rehabilitation would need to be submitted to be balanced. But they're clear in both those cases that it's still a case-by-case determination. It's not a burden of proof eligibility issue, but a matter of the type of evidence that the agency is looking for balance
what
discretion.
Is that evidence? What is the kind of evidence? How could he prove it? Given what the BIA is expecting of him, how in the world could he possibly prove that he's turned his life around?
Well, and I do not believe that what the agency is saying that the individual, again, would have to present evidence that he had no propensity to reoffend.
That's what they said, absent powerful, not just evidence, powerful evidence that he has no propensity to reoffend.
And I would submit the reference to that that's the type of evidence they were looking for, more powerful evidence going towards rehabilitation than was present in this case.
Like
and
what?
Obviously,
give me an example. Like what? He rushed into a burning building and rescued 12 children in his own peril. What are they looking for?
Well, given the considering that it's a scale and it's a balance, as they're balancing equities, in this case, when we have such serious criminal history, which they agreed with the immigration judge in that case, the criminal history was numerous, it was recent, It was serious. They adopted the immigration judge's findings in that respect. They also adopted the immigration judge's findings that the circumstances of the crime were very worrisome and troubling. In this case, we have an individual who was convicted of selling drugs on the street, in possession of an illegal defaced firearm, involved in the burglary of a home in which a juvenile had been used.
Show he's not
that would
person.
Make the scale here, so we would need more evidence here than what
but
was
what
presented.
Is, I'm looking at, what is that evidence? What is that? Let me tell you.
More evidence than what was presented
years ago,
here.
I met with a group of lifers, and that was in Camp Hill, maybe in Greaterford. One of them made a statement to me, and he basically said, 30 years ago when the court put me in prison for committing 3 murders, they did the right thing. I belonged to be in prison. The person you're talking to right now is not the same guy. And he may have been telling me the truth, may not have been telling me the truth, who knows. But what I'm trying to get at is people did change. The IJ thought that Mr. Nunes had changed. Mr. Nunes produced evidence to try to suggest they changed. The IJ bought it. The BIA didn't buy it. But in rejecting it, and I don't want to repeat myself, although I'm doing it, the BIA seemed to erect a hurdle that is so high that no one could meet it, or no one could expect what they have to show to meet it. And I'm wondering whether or not that is something we can be cognizant of. If the BIA is erecting such a high standard that it's impossible to meet it, is that something that a court can be cognizant of? I'm not saying that that's true in this case, but I'm just...
In this case, the evidence of rehabilitation, much of it was, you might say, subjective. He said he's remorseful. He said he has had a religious experience and so on. Those are subjective and they're hard to evaluate. So are they looking for more objective evidence of rehabilitation?
I can just look at the other cases that we have before the court, the unpublished cases from this circuit and the published cases from your sister circuits. And it appears that the evidence that the agency had considered in those cases were similar to here, expressions of remorse, but also other contributions to society. We have here the immigration judge recognizing the expressions of remorse and regret, which the board did not dispute, and also indicating that there wasn't really a great deal in the record in terms of contributions to society, at least as a non-inmate. So that there might have opened the door. But again, I think that that goes more towards the fact that this is a weighing of the evidence. And just one point on that matter, I don't view this as a hurdle, more as a scale. Like, not as a hurdle you have to overcome, but as a weighing of the evidence. When you have a serious criminal history and the circumstances are serious, how much evidence did they need to tip the scale? And for the judge, it went one way, and the board, it went the other way. But that just reflects the fact that it's a weighing of the evidence and a discretionary determination. And the government would urge the court to follow the decisions of the sister circuits that have addressed analogous circumstances in Noble. The government does feel that this case is very closely similar to Noble and Wallace, and in those cases, the board overturned the immigration judge's grant of cancellation of removal, and that case noting that the evidence wasn't adequate towards rehabilitation in those cases. So that's similar to this case.
It's kind of hypothetical, and I'm not trying to pin you down here. I really am trying to wrestle with this thing and see what's the person to do here. What if, rather than Mr. Nunez making the representations about how he turned his life around, he got involved in his religious community, what if his priest or his pastor or his rabbi or someone come in and say, I've seen this person in the church community, I've seen the way he interacts with parishioners, and this is a different guy. This guy is someone who I would trust with my home. In fact, he's living with me now. Would that be enough to substantiate the person's becoming, whatever you want to use the word, reformed, whatever, and I'm not sure the answer is our legal question as to whether or not this is a discretionary review or not. But would that be enough?
And again, it's hypothetical, so I don't know. I can just compare it to the facts of the other cases and indicating it's the type of evidence that the agency would consider in administrative proceedings. And I'm not aware, given the board's published decisions in Marin and CVT, that seems to indicate that it's a case-by-case discretionary analysis, reviewing the evidence.
You're doing a wonderful job of dancing around the question. I don't blame you. I do the same thing if I were in your shoes. But is that enough in this case?
I think in this case we had expressions of remorse and regret, and we did have family members and community members testified that they believed that the applicant had changed his life around, but it wasn't enough for the board, and it's the government's position that that's within.
Would that be enough?
I do believe, actually, there was an affidavit and testimony from a pastor presented in this case, okay. And the board has said that it wasn't enough.
Could I ask you about the same language that troubles me, that I think makes this a closed case? BIA said, but we're not persuaded that this 11th hour declaration supports a finding of genuine rehabilitation. That sounds an awful lot like fact finding, doesn't it?
It's actually in the context that it was presented was what the board was tasked with doing, which was deciding whether or not the discretionary grant was appropriate. And it's in that context, and that's the language the Second Circuit uses in Wallace, which was actually a less strong case than this case, because in Wallace, I believe the immigration judge actually had found genuine rehabilitation, and the board disagreed and said it was not adequate evidence of rehabilitation. And the Second Circuit in that case still declined to exert jurisdiction, found that presented a challenge to the agency's discretionary determination, and additionally that it did not present a question of impermissible fact-finding. When the board looks at the facts of the case and weighs the facts of the case, that's not the same thing as fact-finding, or at least that's what the Second Circuit concluded, and we would urge the court to conclude similarly in this case. And then just to get back to the question that you asked my co-counsel here, I do believe that this is a little bit of a straw man argument, where the immigration judge in this case didn't actually find, unlike, for example, in Wallace, where the immigration judge had found rehabilitation.
It sounds like the BIA interpreted what the IJ concluded as a finding.
I think the BIA recognized the expressions of remorse, the same that the immigration judge did, and expressions of intent, and allocated that where it did. It was evidence towards rehabilitation, but didn't find it enough. Again, in the exercise of their discretion.
What about the language you just read by my colleague that said the BIA said that wasn't enough to support a finding of rehabilitation? If the BIA thought what the IJ did was a finding, isn't that sufficient? That they can't do that?
No, the context here was discretionary, and they may have used that language, but if we look at what they're tasked to do, they are not actually required to find rehabilitation or lack thereof. Evidence going towards rehabilitation is one thing that has been deemed a relevant factor in their discretionary determination. But unlike other areas, perhaps a burden of proof issue in the CAT context, this isn't something that the agency was required to find or not find. It was evidence they were required to weigh, and given all indications they did, they just merely disagreed with where the scales tipped in this case. So we would urge the court to find that this was not impermissible fact-finding. The board stated the correct standard. It applied the correct standard. We see the board referring back numerous times to the immigration judge facts, here some of which indicate a very serious criminal history. And we would urge the court to find similarly to the Second Circuit did in Wallace and Noble, that this is not impermissible fact-finding, and decline to exert jurisdiction in this case and affirm the decision of the agency.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Reserve time, I believe. You reserve time?
You have 3 minutes.
I'm sorry.
You have 3 minutes.
Okay, thanks.
Yes, may it please the court. Counsel discussed CVT and matter of Marin, both requiring evidence of genuine rehabilitation. And the board in this case found that the record contained no evidence of genuine rehabilitation. This is clearly not the case. The petitioner submitted a lot of evidence. I just want to note that we have today with us in the courtroom, in the back row, we have respondents, the petitioner's mother, father, brother, sister, as well as his pastor, Pastor Jarvis, who testified before the immigration judge. He did, and Pastor Jarvis is here with us this morning, as well as numerous members of the petitioner's religious congregation are also here. They came out to support him. That by itself says something. That by itself is evidence.
Did the board find that there was no evidence, as you said, or just there wasn't powerful enough evidence? Right.
The BIA, Your Honor, yeah. The BIA in their decision to look at the exact language, the exact language is, it is our judgment that discretion cannot be exercised in his favor absent powerful evidence that he has no propensity to reoffend. This record does not contain such evidence. In other words, they found no evidence that that he has no propensity.
No powerful evidence. That's what I was asking McKinney about, was that same quote.
Well, we argue that there is powerful evidence that he has no propensity to reoffend. And the judge particularly was very impressed by the testimony of Pastor Jarvis, who he's a bishop. And he came and he testified on behalf of Mr. Landestoy. And the judge said, this pastor came and he laid his reputation down on the line for this man.
Yeah, that's in the IJ's.
That's in the IJ's okay. Oral decision.
Okay.
That he said, this pastor has laid his reputation in the community on the line for Mr. Landestoy. That is powerful. And I maintain that Mr. Landestoy has presented powerful evidence and the BIA ignored it because the BIA didn't want to see it. This is appellate fact finding. This is not discretionary reweighing of evidence. The judge was very clear. The judge Finston said, I am optimistic and I believe that Mr. Landestoy will make positive contributions to his community if we allow him to be released. And although he didn't use the word rehabilitated, that statement is very clear what he believed. The difference between a belief and a fact. Now, if the judge believes it's a fact, it's essentially a fact. Our system allows, our system says the judges make the fact finding, not the BIA. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Westrick, I also want to thank you. We very rarely, so this has been my experience, we rarely see, I guess you're retained counsel, not pro bono counsel.
I am retained counsel.
But we rarely see really good legal representation, unfortunately, in immigration cases. And there's a lot that's been written about that. But it's very difficult for people in immigration posture or removal proceedings to find good competent counsel. So you've been not saying that you're right or that we agree with you, because we haven't talked about the case. You may well lose, despite the fact you're very good. But I want to thank you for the manner in which you represented Mr. Nunez. We don't often see that. And Ms. McKinney, I want to thank you for your candor and for tolerating my kind of mental wanderings, wherever they were going. It's a very, very difficult case, very interesting case, very, very difficult case. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Take about a 5-minute break, and then we'll take the last case of...